It's clearer with every passing day just how much information about us is owned by major corporations. Non-anonymized, personal data about everything from our sex lives to our voting habits is being collected and shared, often without our knowledge or permission. Now, maybe you don't care who knows about your last Amazon purchase or Netflix binge, but if you've taken a genetic ancestry test, your DNA is out there. Do you know who has it? If you wear an Apple Watch, your blood pressure and heart rate could be monitored. Did you read the terms and conditions? And the algorithms that use all of that information are becoming exponentially more powerful. So what does this mean?
It means, among other things, that an external system can know you far better than you know yourself. It can then predict your choices and decisions. It can manipulate your emotions. And it can sell you anything, whether a product or a politician.
Yuval Noah Harari is the big thinking historian who wrote the bestseller Sapiens. In his latest, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, he warns that whoever owns the data owns the future. He told Steve Paulson it's become the most important resource in the world.
Previously in history, first land and then machines were the most important resource. Now data. Politics is becoming the struggle to control the data flows. And the future belongs to those who manage to monopolize or to own the data.
Okay, well, let me play the cynic for a moment here. So algorithms know us much better than we know ourselves. Actually, they know.
They could know us. We are not there yet, okay. But we can get there.
Right. So you might just think, okay, why not just give ourselves over to the computers? Let them program our lives. Let them make decisions for us. Maybe we'll be happier then.
Well, in some cases, this will actually be a very good idea. In some areas, it's better to trust the algorithms than to trust human beings. It starts with things like trusting who is driving the car. At present, more than 1 million people are killed each year in traffic accidents. That's more than the number of people who die from war and crime and terrorism put together. And almost all these traffic accidents are because of humans making bad decisions. And if we switch and let the algorithms, the computers, drive the vehicles, it won't reduce traffic accidents to zero, but it is likely to save 1 million lives a year. Already today, we give algorithms more and more authority to decide for us things like which movies to see and which books to buy, and we no longer search for information, we Google.
But there's a big difference between, you know, if we're trying to figure out what movie to see, okay, we look at recommended movies to us, which is obviously the product of an algorithm, but still, we're making the choice based on those recommendations. You're saying this would take it many steps further than that.
Yeah, I mean, again, first of all, as you trust more and more the algorithm, you gradually lose the ability to make the decisions yourself. It's use it or lose it. To take another example, it's like navigating your way around the city.
Right.
As you become more and more dependent on the recommendation of the GPS or of Google Maps, in principle, you are still the master. At any particular moment, you can just throw your smartphone from the window of the car and just follow your own gut instincts. But after a couple of years of just following the recommendations of Google Maps, you no longer have these gut instincts. You no longer know the city.
Right. This is so interesting because, I mean, usually the fear that we hear about algorithms and really the power of artificial intelligence is that the robots will take over. They will become our masters, as we see in so many science fiction movies. But you're saying something quite different. Essentially, we will become the machines that are monitoring us and telling us what to do.
Yeah, we will merge with them. We will shift authority to them, and in many cases, voluntarily. And in most science fiction movies about these themes, what happens in the end is that the robots rebel and try to kill all the humans, and then the humans must fight back and destroy the robots. And the far more frightening scenario is that the robots won't rebel. They will be obedient, and they will make better decisions than us. And then the question is, so what is human life all about? I mean, we have for thousands of years constructed this ideal of human life as a drama of decision-making. Small decisions and big decisions.
This is what our ethical systems are based on. This is, to some degree, what religion is based on. The power of our ability, our capacity to make decisions, good decisions.
Exactly. You make good decisions, you go to heaven. You make bad decisions, you go to hell. And this is, you know, so many, everything from Shakespeare plays to silly Hollywood comedies. It's about these decisions. Whom should I marry? Should I go to war or make peace? All these kinds of decisions. What happens to our notion of humanity if more and more of these decisions are actually taken by algorithms?
There's a politics to all of this. I'm curious about how you see our political moment right now, because it would seem that the dominant political ideology, political system that has come to sort of reign over much of the world, liberal democracy, that seems to be under threat right now. In World War II, fascism basically was defeated.
Mm-hmm.
Communism later collapsed with the Soviet Union. You know, Francis Fukuyama famously claimed that we had reached the end of history and liberal democracy had triumphed once and for all. But now it seems like that's not at all clear as more autocratic leaders take control. And a lot of democratic countries are really struggling right now.
We are in a very bewildering moment in history because we lack a good story to understand what is happening and where are we heading. The liberal story is based on the ideal and the notion of free will, that the free will of individual humans is the ultimate source of authority in the world. But science is now telling us that there is no such thing as free will. This is just a myth.
There's a lot of debate about that. A lot of scientists, a lot of philosophers are not willing to give up that idea of free will.
As private individuals, maybe, but if you look at the literature, at the scientific journals, at the scientific articles and experiments and so forth, science just doesn't even understand what the meaning of the word freedom is. I mean, the way that the Cambridge Analytica and all these companies and bots behaved is that, first of all, they hacked humans. They got to know what are your existing hatreds and fears and biases. And once you know what are the biases and existing weaknesses of a particular person, you can work on that.
The fears and the hatreds are more primal emotions often. So if you can tap those, then you can really control to some degree the political discourse.
Yes, if you want to destroy the ability to have a meaningful public conversation, then you discover the weaknesses of people, their fears and hatreds and so forth, and you magnify them. So maybe they discover that you have already a built-in bias against immigrants. They will show you a fake news story about an immigrant gang raping local women. And they know that you will believe it very easily because you already have this bias. But your neighbor, she has a very different bias. She is actually in favor of immigration. But her bias is she thinks everybody who opposes immigration is a fascist, racist idiot. So the same group will show her a very different story about, I don't know, a gang of right-wing fanatics who kills immigrants. And she will believe this as easily as you believe the story about the immigrants raping local women, because again, it plays up to her existing fears and hatreds and weaknesses. Now, if you think that people make decisions out of completely free will, you will say this is impossible. But then you are very easy prey to such manipulations.
Okay, so all of this is pretty frightening. I mean, if your crystal ball gazing is more or less accurate, what can we do? Let's talk about companies like Facebook and Google that, yep, you know, have developed these incredibly sophisticated algorithms, and they will become ever more sophisticated.
So we need to make sure, for example, that the big data algorithms are serving us, the individual people, and not serving just the interests of a corporation or a government. At present, we see more and more AI systems that are used to monitor individuals in the service of governments and corporations. But the technology itself can be used in an opposite way to monitor the corporations and the governments in the service of the individuals. We can, for example, build an AI system that monitors government officials to prevent corruption. Most of the efforts are now going in the opposite direction, in giving the government or the big corporations the ability to monitor us. But there is no technical problem in reversing the direction of the surveillance.
Mm-hmm. So you've laid out all kinds of pretty frightening scenarios for where the world might be headed. Are you more an optimist or more a pessimist about where we're headed?
I will summarize my view of the world at present in three simple statements. Things are better than ever before. Things are still quite bad, and things can get much, much worse. And this adds up, I think, to a somewhat optimistic view of the world. We are not stuck in the same miserable position for the whole of history. There are things we can do to improve the situation, but there is nothing inevitable about it. I'm not like a blind believer in progress, that science and technology will inevitably create a better world. No, science and technology guarantee only one thing, and this thing is power. Humankind is going to become more powerful, that's for sure. But what to do with this power? Here we have all kinds of options. And if you look back in history, sometimes people use power wisely and very often they misuse their power. One of the most important forces in human history is human stupidity.
Right.
We should never underestimate human stupidity. And when you combine this limitless resource of human stupidity with the amazing new powers that humankind will gain in the 21st century, this can be a recipe for disaster.
Yuval Noah Harari, fighting human stupidity one book at a time. His most recent is called 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, and he was talking with Steve Paulson. To the Best of Our Knowledge is produced every week by humans, not algorithms. Our names are Mark Rickers, Charles Monroe Kane, Shannon Henry Kleiber, Angelo Bautista, Joe Hartke, and Steve Paulson. And I'm Anne Strainchamps. No Facebook or Twitter accounts were harmed in the making of this episode, but whatever you decide to do with your own, thanks for listening.